Welcome to episode 501 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, I am so glad you don't say 501.
That's because I know how to talk.
That's wrong. And most people say that when I listen to podcasts with numbers like this. And it makes me crazy because there's not a decimal in there.
Exactly. And is for decimal points. Welcome to episode 501 of the Grammar Hour with Richard and Josh. No, we don't have grammar tips for you. But Richard, we're recording this on October 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Today is the 10th anniversary. This would have been really fitting if this would have been last week. It is the 10th anniversary of what? It's quite fitting for this show. And we celebrated on this show 10 years ago.
Oh, if we celebrated...
That's a pretty big hint.
Yeah, if we celebrated, the only big thing I can think of that would be an anniversary, would Windows 8 release be it?
No, not Windows 8.
No. Oh.
No, Windows 8 was like 2013, 2012.
Okay. They hadn't made that big, huge, monstrous mistake yet. Okay. Then I don't know.
You were close. Windows 7 launched on this day.
No way. Really?
In 2009.
For some reason, I thought it was older than that.
Nope. It's not.
All right.
Yeah. 2009, Windows 7.
Yeah.
It was a good, good, good version of Windows.
Yes.
Really good.
Yes, or as I liked to call it at the time, Windows Vista 0.1.
Windows Vista Plus Plus.
Because it was technically Vista version 6.1, but
right.
And not significantly different from Vista, just fixed.
Right. They finally got everybody to write drivers for it. It only took them like 4 years. And they got drivers and made it good. All right. We have a couple of pieces of feedback, not nearly as many as we covered last week, but some interesting ones nonetheless. And I think these are both first-time feedbackers. I don't think that's really a word, but I'm going
to
make it up.
We keep on using that word. We need to stop that.
So anyway, this first one is from Alfred. And the subject of this message was Plex DVR just doesn't work. He says, I'm specifically talking about the inability of Plex DVR to handle watching a recording in progress properly. I tried the new Plex server update and tested it. No improvement. It still chokes if you try to time shift a recording in progress. Basic transport is still awkward. And when he says transport, he means fast forward and rewind. I have an Intel-based QNAP server and an NVIDIA Shield client, so client-server performance isn't an issue. Yeah, that seems like beefy enough hardware to handle this. He says, transport does not operate reliably. It will stop and freeze, and you will at best lose your place in the recording. I wonder what happens at worst. Like, recording gets deleted, machine burns to the ground. I'm not really sure what at worst is there. He says, I was hoping that Plex would be my DVR. This isn't new tech, guys. The last cable box I had, a Cisco 7150U, ran Microsoft's Homeroom, a version of Windows Media Center. Man, that is going back some years.
Mm-hmm.
This message would have fit in last week.
That was basically OEM'd Media Center is what Homeroom was. Yeah.
Yeah. He said that Homeroom did these things and worked flawlessly. A 7-year-old set-top box with a low-end MediaTek processor is what that thing was. He says, I've been using the Channels DVR for 3 months and it does work flawlessly. It's great for live sports. It's a bit more expensive at $8 a month. But it works. Plus, about half the system resources are needed on the server side. For example, recording a show using Plex brought my QNAP server up to over 30% CPU utilization. When fast forwarding, the CPU shot up to over 70%. Wow! With the Channels DVR, I see 7% utilization during recording and maybe 15% during fast forward. So, wow, his experience is not great with Plex DVR.
Yeah, I will say I am less than satisfied with the transport experience. I often have to wait for things to rebuffer when I skip through commercials or something like that. And that just, it seems like we should be better at doing that now than than how long it takes. I don't have any personal experience measuring what it does to my box performance because I'm not really ever doing more than this on the box at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why he would be frustrated with it for sure. And certainly not having a grid guide and some other features like that on all platforms. It isn't. I mean, we've said from the beginning, it's not a good live TV experience.
Right. Right.
And I know that, you know, a number of people have tried it and just kind of given up on it. Dave McCabe tried it and talked about the experience and he's like, yeah, it's not ready yet.
I would like to go back and give it another shot just to see what my experience would be, because it's now been quite a few months since I've used it, probably since I got the TiVo, which, guys, like every time I use the TiVo, I love it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm still using it as my DVR because from a recording perspective, it's pretty reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I've rarely had problems with it except after this change that we had where we knew that some of the shows were not necessarily going to record when they switched the data up on us a couple months ago.
Right.
That my fall recordings that were basically revisits of shows that I've watched in the past, none of them worked right. So I had to rebuild all of them again. But we knew that was coming. So, yeah. Plus, Channels is the app that would be available for me on an Apple TV if I wanted to be doing anything with a grid guide and watching TV and stuff like that. So that's something to consider. Oh, speaking of Apple TV, we have a message from David. And David says, first, in a disclaimer, this email is not intended to make Josh angry, and I'll not be responsible for any broken furniture.
I'm not sure what kind of person David thinks I am.
Yeah, I don't know. Josh, you're going to behave, right? I mean, come on.
Probably. I'm looking to see if I have anything breakable.
All right, well, we're going to start off bold here. The Apple TV is the best video streaming device, period.
What? just kidding.
He continues on. It has Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. Its store has the most 4K content and has $4.99 genre sales every week. In addition, any HD movie that you have purchased there gets automatically upgraded to 4K for free. Except Disney. When 4K for the movie...
What was that, Richard?
Except Disney. When 4K for the movie becomes available, you can use Vudu on the Apple TV, which is nice for 4K Disney films. All the major video apps are available, such as Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. Popular Apple services such as Apple Podcasts, Photos, and Music are already integrated into the device. The Apple Arcade and TV Plus are coming, although the jury is still out on those services. Seriously, in my mind, it's simply better than the alternatives. To be fair, Roku could be a close contender if it ever got Dolby Vision and Atmos, especially since the Apple TV app is now dropping on Roku. Thanks for reading this. Yeah, so, hey, I totally agree with David. Funny about that.
I can't imagine. Wow. Where do I start? I'm going to start at the end. Roku, if you have a Roku TV, does support Dolby Vision. I can't remember if it supports Atmos, but I think it does do Dolby Vision.
Does that mean that it has the capability in the apps that run on Roku to then play Dolby Vision content and Atmos content? Not Atmos, Dolby Vision.
Because
the apps have to be probably designed to support it too.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point. I I don't remember for sure. Sixth Layer is fact-checking me in the chat right now. He says this year's TCL Roku TV does support Atmos.
Oh, that's cool.
Last year's doesn't.
Okay. So
I may be wrong there. Like, David makes a lot of really, really good points here. He makes a lot of great points. I wouldn't even necessarily say he's wrong unless you want to factor in the cost of the device, because this thing is way more expensive than almost everything else that it competes with. Almost. I mean, if you rule out video game consoles, which typically aren't the greatest streaming devices, the top of the line Roku is still way less. Amazon Fire TV devices, way less. Like, everything else costs way less money than an Apple TV. And almost everything else has a better remote than the Apple TV.
Oh, nearly everything but the Echo from Seton has a better remote.
Now, the one thing that isn't less, that is a really great streaming box, is the NVIDIA Shield, of course.
Right. And arguably, maybe that is one of the best experiences, although that's not going to be getting Apple TV. That's not on their priority list right now.
Yeah, I don't know why Android TV ever ends up being on anybody's priority list, because it doesn't really seem like a popular platform, but it still has just about everything imaginable.
No, don't worry. They'll sweep it out from under you one of these days, just like they do with everything else we love that Google makes.
Yeah. Like, I guess in closing, David, you make tons of great arguments, and especially if you're someone who's in the Apple ecosystem and you've got the money to spare, then go for it. But we're living in a great time. Like, there's lots of great devices now.
Yep.
And a Roku would be way cheaper and would get you every service that you want. Maybe not everything at 4K and all of that super high-end stuff. So if you're not looking for super high-end tech, then you can definitely get devices way, way cheaper. If you're a single person who is, you know, super tech focused, maybe a Chromecast is good enough for you. I don't think it's a great solution, but I know that some people have gotten by with essentially Chromecasting things for a long time. I wouldn't really recommend that, but there's a lot of really, really great options out there, and a lot of great devices that do double duty. You know, the Xbox and the PlayStation 4 both do most of this stuff really well. The TiVo does a lot of this stuff pretty well, not everything, but most things. You know, so there's a lot of, and a lot of the other over the air DVR devices that you can buy also have a lot of the streaming capability in there, but almost none of those are as full featured as the Apple TV. So I completely agree with David on that point. I'm still not buying one. I don't need it.
Fair point.
Okay, so let's move into our news for this week. And we are going to start with a couple of Hulu stories. These really could have gone in any order. In fact, I probably would have put them in the opposite order, but it's fine. So even though I didn't, because I'm the one who wrote the notes. Hulu bringing 4K content to the Xbox One is in the headline, but it's actually not just the Xbox One. Well, it is right now, I guess. But Hulu, they used to have 4K content, then they took it all away for some reason. Then back in July, they announced, we're bringing this back. When they brought it back, it was super limited. It was only 5th gen or later Apple TVs and Chromecast Ultra. What? I don't even know what generation we're currently on with Apple TVs.
We're on 5. Yeah, I mean, the point being that you have to have the 4K capable version of the Apple TV. That's no real limitation. That's just kind of obvious.
Right. Okay, so that happened back in July. Now it's available on Xbox One if you have a 4K capable Xbox One. So it's got to be an Xbox One S or an Xbox One X. And then it's coming soon to 4K capable Amazon Fire TV devices and WebOS TVs from LG. That's all great. The content selection is still not great. If you love yourself some Hulu originals, this is good news. If you like pretty much anything else that's on Hulu, it's probably still not in 4K.
And that is largely not any of their doing. I mean, they probably don't have 4K masters of most of the content they're showing. Right. Even on Amazon, which has had 4K content for, I think, like 2 years now, if not more, they have very few movies. And I don't think they have any TV shows except for their own series that are in 4K. Because, again, it's just not being distributed that way right now. It might not even be filmed that way. Who knows?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Since you can't really broadcast, like there's almost no one broadcasting in 4K, most TV shows probably aren't being made in 4K at all.
Right. Right. So this is not surprising. It will get better over time.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, one of the other features that they recently rolled out is the ability to download content, which I find so fascinating because Hulu was the service that came out after Netflix offered it, saying, oh, no, no, that's all too complicated. We're not going to, our customers don't want that. They're not going to understand. We're not going to worry about that. There was a lot of demand for it. People want that. Not everybody's connected all the time. People like me travel and we're on planes. We can't stream video in the planes. So you need offline content. People go to the mountains. They don't necessarily have ubiquitous coverage. People, I don't know, sometimes are just someplace that they can't easily stream anything on Wi-Fi. And the 3G or 4G or fake 5G isn't good enough. So the ability to download content is really good. Lots of caveats. First off, you have to be a no commercials customer. So that's their $12 tier. That means if you have Hulu as something bundled with other services like Spotify, or maybe your cable company is offering it to you, or perhaps you're getting it with Disney Plus when that package is available, you're not going to get this service. It's only on the $12 a month tier. Also, it's not on all shows. I don't know what rhyme or reason they've used to determine what shows are downloadable and what are not. Again, many of their originals, but of things that are not their originals, seems to be across all the networks, but some shows are, some shows aren't. Some shows let you download last week's episode. Some shows don't let you download anything from the current season, only past seasons. So it's kind of a convoluted, confusing mess, just like they promised. They have a kids section. That's cool. So you can download a bunch of episodes of something and have them on a tablet or a phone so your kids can watch something when you're on your road trip to the mountains and you don't have connectivity. That's a good idea. I like that. But those downloads are only good for 30 days, just like pretty much any rental that you might have. And once you start watching it, it's only good for 2 days, just like any rental that you might have. So lots of, I guess, gotchas on this. But overall, I'm glad that they've added the service. It's available on iOS and Android. Don't expect to see it on Windows anytime soon, like probably ever.
I've obviously seen a whole lot of headlines about this. No one on the internet wrote a better headline for this than you. This is absolutely perfect. Hulu now lets some customers download some titles on some devices. Yeah.
Thank you.
So many caveats here.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But it's good that they're doing it.
It is good that they're doing it, but they haven't even done it as well as some of the other guys. Like, I think the thing that kills me the most is the thing where you only get 2 days to watch. Like, yes, I do want to load up a tablet with kid stuff before vacation, but I don't vacation for 2 days usually. I vacation for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know if anyone from Hulu has ever been around a child before, but if you throw a bunch of shows on a tablet for a week, I bet they'll watch the same three episodes the entire week.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. this is not a great solution for a whole lot of reasons.
Yeah, I think they need to get some customer feedback on this, and maybe that will influence this. This reminds me of when our director of operations at my last company decided that the policy they were going to have on our phones was that if someone tried to log into your phone 10 times unsuccessfully, it was going to erase all the content on the phone.
Right.
You clearly don't have kids.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah. All right. We've still got a couple more video stories here. Real quick one. If you're a Tableau user, Tableau being another over-the-air DVR device, then they're adding a grid guide. Everyone loves a grid guide on Amazon Fire TV devices and Android TV devices in their latest update. So there's other bug fixes and stuff like that. You can check out the link in the show notes for all of the details. But anytime a DVR service gets a grid guide, that's kind of big news, because that is the number one thing that everyone complains about when it comes to DVR services.
Yep.
All right. And then one more story on Disney Plus. Disney Plus has become like the new Plex on the show. Like, we have to talk about Disney Plus every single episode.
Absolutely.
Disney Plus launching very, very soon. You know, for as much as we talk about it, I should probably have the launch date memorized. I don't. Do you know? I don't know. I'm not clicking the link to find out. It's early November. I haven't done any of the pre-orders because I'm going to do that Hulu bundle that you mentioned earlier. So Disney finally announced every single show and movie that's going to be available. It's a lot. It's a lot of content. So they did exactly what anyone would do when they need to release a really, really long list.
Yeah.
They took to Twitter.
A Twitter storm.
300 tweets.
Hours. It took them hours to post all of the titles that are going to be up.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know, but I think it was ingenious.
Because it just took over Twitter for the day?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. I think it was brilliant. I loved it.
I think it's annoying and ridiculous. So we're obviously not going to go through this list. What I want to know is, when you look through this list, what are the things you're most excited about?
Yeah. So I think the thing that intrigued me the most was movies that I either didn't realize or had forgotten were Disney movies.
Okay.
Like, there were a ton of titles that I'm like, wait a minute, that was Disney? And most of them are live action, right? A lot of them are live action family films, not all family films. So I think it's going to be interesting to just kind of wade through some of the back catalog, because, I mean, as far as most of these movies are concerned, with the exception of some of the less well-known older animated titles, I have so much of anything new from Disney.
Yeah.
I have all 22 Marvel movies. I have all of the Star Wars stuff. So none of that is all that exciting to me because it's already available to me. What I think is going to be really interesting is diving deep into that catalog.
Okay, so you're not going to pick out any one title or anything like that?
No, I don't have. There is not one title. I will tell you, though, if they have a high-definition master of The Black Hole, I'm going to be very excited about that.
Oh, that would be impressive. That would be very impressive.
I loved that movie.
Huh. I've never actually seen it, but...
Oh, it's so bad now, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it. How about you? Are you thinking anything that's going to be particularly celebrated in your household?
Well, there's definitely going to be some big celebrations in my house, like Girl Meets World and, you know, some of the more recent live action shows for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Disney movies, of course, the Star Wars movies, you know, but that kind of goes without saying. For me personally, and I don't know that I'll actually watch any of this stuff, but the things that got me the most excited was it seemed like the folks over at Disney said, you know what we need to do? We need to make sure that everything from Josh Pollard's childhood is available here. Because there are a few cartoons that I watched the crap out of when I was a kid. X-Men, Darkwing Duck. There was another one. I forget what the third one was now. They're all here. Oh, and Gargoyles. I watched those three shows a ton. None of them more than X-Men, of course. But I watched those shows all the time as a kid. And see, it's like, I can relive my 10-year-old self.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. When I was a kid watching like the after school or Saturday morning cartoons, Disney didn't own that yet.
Right.
It was basically Hanna-Barbera and stuff like that. So, yeah. Cool.
So those are the things we're excited about. So what isn't there that you're disappointed isn't there? Anything?
Well, I know that they're not going to have new releases and stuff like that. They're still going to be windowed and offered exclusively to some other services, potentially like pay-per-view and stuff like that. So that has to go through all of the cycle, and they need to make some cash on that before it ends up in the catalog. I totally get that. I know that there were some people that are kind of frustrated by that. You know, that's not a big surprise. It's not like there isn't anything there to watch, right? So, right. Yeah, I'm not terribly concerned about anything, really. I'm very pleased with what they announced.
Yeah, so for me personally, I couldn't find anything. But there is one huge, huge omission that I told my kids about this morning, and they were upset. No Liv and Maddie.
I don't even know what that is.
I know. I'm sure you don't know what Liv and Maddie is, but it was a show. I think it was 4 or 5 seasons, live action. It's total tween, you know, drama show. And my oldest absolutely loved it. And it's not there. I don't know why. The star of Liv and Maddie was the star of the movie The Descendants. Did you watch that? You didn't watch the Okay, fine.
I did not.
You're shaking his head at me.
Okay. I did not. No.
Okay. Well, fine. Then I guess you just don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I wonder if that's one of those strange situations where it was a licensing partnership or a production partnership on the show, which happens all the time, and they just don't currently have the rights to show it.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well, one other quick story that I just added at the last minute, because I didn't want to forget about this. And we mentioned this briefly in the email message that we received. Apple TV is now available as an app on Roku devices. I have installed it and tried it out on my Roku, just reminding me how much I dislike the Roku remote as well. But it's there. It seems to work. Now, I have heard other people in blog posts and on podcasts say that it's a crashy piece of crap. So perhaps your mileage may vary. I didn't actually try to watch anything on it, so I wasn't stressing it at all. I just wanted to poke around and see how it looked, how it performed and stuff like that. It's definitely not as fast and fluid on the Roku as it is on my Apple TV, but I think that's to be expected. It's not as powerful a box.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. But still kind of like, it's a weird world to be living in when an Apple TV app is on a Roku.
It is. It is indeed.
So weird. All right. One quick audio story, and it's from Spotify. Spotify is giving all of their paid premium subscribers a free Google Home Mini, as long as you go through and click some forms and all that stuff. It's the old Home Mini. It's not the brand new Nest Mini or whatever the new device is called, which is supposed to sound really good and all that stuff. It's an old one, but it's free, so who cares? And this might sound really familiar because They did this exact deal. Well, not exact deal, but they did this deal last year around this time for anybody who was on a family plan. They were really trying to push the family plan subscriptions. So I jumped in at that time and got myself a free Google Home Mini in that deal. But you don't have to be on a family plan. It's any paid subscription right now while supplies last. So run out and get one if you're not all, you know, if you are a Spotify premium subscriber. Unless, here's one big caveat, if you took advantage of last year's deal, you can't get another one. Sorry.
That's fair.
It is fair. I didn't really need another one anyway. And I didn't need the one that I got last year. I'm pretty sure we gave it away on the show. So yeah, it's fine. But it's always nice to see free listening devices. And they're saying, along with this announcement of the free device, that they're working on some new features with Google Assistant. I'm not really sure what else they could do. They're smarter at this stuff than I am, obviously. But I don't know. For me, I just want to yell at it to play whatever artist or playlist I want to listen to. And it does that just fine.
So right.
I'm not sure what else they're going to add. All right, let's move on to some gaming news. Richard is probably thinking this is the time that he can take a nap because there's a lot here, but I'm actually going to go through this fairly quickly, I think, because some of this stuff is not really that, not that big of a deal. So Microsoft's xCloud, now available in beta to some people. So they started taking orders. The orders isn't the right word. They opened up sign up for this over a month ago. Now people are starting to get access. I don't know anyone personally who has access yet, but so they're slowly rolling it out. This is their game streaming service. So you can do this on not powerful devices like phones and tablets. In fact, right now you can only do this on phones and tablets, and they have to be of the Android variety. No iPhones here yet, no streaming on a Windows PC, no streaming on an Xbox or anything like that. Android devices only. And as part of this trial, there's only 4 games available, but these aren't crap games. Gears 5, which just came out like a little over a month ago, Halo 5, Sea of Thieves. So Captain Lon Paul is super excited about that. Mm-hmm. You can now play Sea of Thieves in the van. It'll be great. And the last one is Killer Instinct. So a nice spread of different types of games. Fighting, like putting a fighting game on there is like that's a gutsy choice, because fighting games, the people who are really good at fighting games, these people are insane. Like they are counting frames of animations to know when to do different moves and stuff. It's insane how good and meticulous these types of players are. So latency really matters on fighting games. So for them to put Killer Instinct on there is a really big deal. The other ones, you know, it's just a nicer spread of different types of games to see how well all of that's going to work. Once I get access, maybe I'll be able to share my thoughts, but I don't have access yet. Google had their big hardware event just a couple weeks ago, and as part of that, they finally gave us a release date for their game streaming service. It's called Google Stadia. It's launching November 19th to everybody. This is not a beta. This is launching to everybody. If you want in right away, then you need to buy the whole Google Stadia. I think it's called the Founders Edition. It gets you their controller. It also gets you a Chromecast Ultra and 3 months of their pro service. That's $129.
Now, if I remember correctly, wasn't that like a pre-launch deal? Or is that going to be the price going forward? For some reason, I thought that was a pre-order thing.
There was a pre-order special, but I think it was just for a different color of the controller.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Then the service itself, there's a free version and a pro version. The pro version gets you 4K streaming and 5.1 audio. Obviously, those things require an even faster internet connection. The free version gets you 1080p with stereo audio. Both of them will go to 60 frames per second, though. The pro version also gets you access to some free games. Now, don't get too excited about this. Like, when we think free games in a game streaming service, we start thinking of things like Game Pass or Play Pass. It's not like that. You're getting a free game. One, it's Destiny 2. Destiny 2 is a great game, but you know what it is? It's a free game on every other platform right now. So
they went all out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So everything else, like, this is not a Netflix style service. Everything else, like, you're buying these games digitally for $60 or whatever the cost of the games are, and then you just have access to stream them. And this crazy controller that they're launching, which has Wi-Fi and all this stuff built in for extra functionality and all that stuff, at launch won't work wirelessly. You've got to plug it in. Like, this feels fairly beta, even though they're not calling it beta.
But that's what Google does.
Well, but Google just calls things beta for like 5 years.
I don't think they do that anymore. I think they just do a little bit of what Amazon does. They throw stuff out, see what works, and then make decisions later about what they're going to keep and what they're going to get rid of.
Yeah. If I had to put money on it, I would bet that this is a service that they're going to get rid of. I don't understand why anyone would jump in on this service. It doesn't make sense to me. There's better options from everybody else, but we'll see.
Is there anything about this that you look at as a gamer and say, wow, that one thing, like, I don't necessarily want it, but that one thing really makes them stand out. Nobody else is doing that.
They have some cool features around YouTube integration. That's the separator. Like, that's the thing that makes it different. It's not different enough to make me want it, but mm-hmm. like, you're going to be able to be watching a YouTube video of a game and click a button and jump right into that game.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool. It's not reason enough for me to get this, though. I don't think it's reason enough for anybody to get this.
And frankly, there's nothing that would necessarily prevent other services from providing some similar capability through Twitch or Mixer or something like that.
Right. In fact, Mixer might have something like that already. I might be wrong, but they've announced a lot of features like that in the past on Mixer. All right, so that's Stadia. We'll see how that goes once it actually comes out later this month, or later next month. It's not quite November yet. On the Xbox side, the big new update for the Xbox One is now out, the October 2019 Xbox update. This has been out for a couple of weeks. You might not even notice that it came out, which is kind of amazing considering how they've done things in the past. It seems like they're always radically changing the UI, and they didn't this time. They did. The UI is just not that much different. The one kind of big thing that they did from the UI is that if you're on the section of the dashboard that shows all of the Mixer feeds, you can watch Mixer videos right there on the dashboard without having to launch the Mixer app. I guess that's cool. I guess.
Yeah.
What I think is actually kind of cooler is the parental controls, and maybe that's just because I'm a parent, but they're a lot more fine-grained. You can put limits on specific apps and games. So, you know, maybe you only allow them an hour of Fortnite, but 2 hours of Roblox or something like that. They also have per device limits, and this will actually work not even just across Xbox and Windows, but even Android devices. I think that requires those Android devices to be using the Microsoft launcher, but that's kind of awesome to have that kind of control over that many different devices.
Yeah, cool.
And then the other big, big in air quotes, I guess, thing that they added is wishlist notifications. And that just means when you've added a game to your wishlist, if it goes on sale, you get a notification. This is not some revolutionary feature. Steam has had this for many, many years. It's something that should have been there for many, many years on Xbox, and we've finally got it. So that's good, I guess. And that's it. That's really pretty much it on the new Xbox update. And considering this box has been out for 6 years, that's probably how it should be, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, and aren't we expecting a major next generation overhaul of the experience anyway? And if that comes, then, well, we talked about it. We talked about it a couple months ago, I believe. So if that comes out, then at this point, they shouldn't be making major changes to the experience. They should be just adding nice little things, just going through the backlog and adding the features in that they've wanted to add in. That's where they should be in the life cycle of this thing. And that makes complete sense to me. Frankly, one of the things that drives me nuts about Windows with its every, you know, twice a year release is that it feels like they're still trying to figure out the experience because they keep changing it in major ways.
Yeah, you're not wrong. All right. One more gaming story, and that is an update on the Windows PC side. The Xbox Game Bar got a fairly major update. The main two new features are achievement tracking, which if you're an Xbox player, you already know what this is. This is where you can view the list of achievements for the game that you're playing and then pick the one that you're working on now. So a lot of achievements are like, you know, collect 100 of these collectibles. And in the achievement list, it'll show that, you know, you've got 65 of them. You can now basically pin that on screen so that you can see your progress as you're working on it. It's a nice little update. And then the other thing is they've made some more modifications to the performance overlay. So this is the thing that shows like your CPU utilization, your GPU utilization, that stuff. They've now finally added a frame rate counter. I love having this in Steam. I turn this on all the time. It's nice to finally have it in the Xbox Game Bar. It works for all games, whether it's a, you know, a game that you downloaded on Game Pass or it's a game that you're playing from Steam. It'll show you the frame rates. They've added more transparency features and different colors for what color the numbers show up on. There can be a graph that's showing up if you want it to take up a huge amount of space on your screen. The only thing that I want them to change or really add is the GPU section. It only shows you utilization of GPU RAM. That's useful, but I would also like to know how much of the processor on the GPU is being utilized. Am I, you know, maxing out the limits of the GPU's processor right now? That's what I want to know. And it doesn't show me that.
I have questions.
Okay.
Why do gamers want to know this? Like, I look at this and think of this as the equivalent of showing the constantly changing variable bit rate while I'm viewing a streamed movie. Why do I care?
You care in games because you have so much control over things. In games, you can control, you know, essentially how good are the graphics? Because maybe your computer isn't fast enough to play it with all of the settings on max. And it's easiest to figure out how to adjust things when you can see numbers instead of just kind of judging by your eyes.
Okay.
So it makes a ton of sense from that. Sixth layer in the chat wants to know, does it show you GPU and CPU temperatures? No, that would be nice to know, but that's not as common of a thing to see in a lot of these overlays either. So,
and my reaction to that is, oh, come on.
Like, why would you want to see it?
Or, right.
Well, because if either of those things overheat, your computer shuts down. That's why.
Okay. Okay. Obviously, I don't understand this culture.
And if your computer shuts down in the middle of a game, and there's nothing there, there's almost nothing that stresses a computer more than playing games. It's not like running your Excel documents is going to overheat your CPU and cause your computer to shut down. Playing a 4K game at 60 frames per second could. So that's why we want to see this stuff.
Okay. Assuming you're not running a rendering farm on your computers as
right.
well.
Right. Those are the other types of things that you would definitely want to be looking at temperatures for sure. All right. We're not going to go through free games. We've got a link to our post over at the DMZ that shows all of the free games that are available right now from Xbox One, PlayStation Plus, the Epic Game Store, the games that are free from Twitch. We've got them all listed in one convenient post with links to make it super easy for you to go and get a whole bunch of free games on lots of different platforms. So go and check out that post. That's it for our news. Richard, what is going on in your entertainment center?
Mostly content, Josh. Mostly content. It's been 3 weeks, I think, since we've talked about this. So a lot of stuff. The TV season has started. I'm trying to stay up with the new shows. Been watching The Conners, Superstore, Modern Family, Good Place. My reaction to all of those, every single one of them, has been, okay, not great.
I think that's fair.
But okay.
I think that's fair. Even on The Good Place.
Even on The Good Place. Even on The Superstore, which is my favorite sitcom right now. So, yeah, kind of lackluster. I've been catching up on last season of Arrow and the Flash. We started season 2 of Grace and Frankie. I've been watching season 2 of Cheers. I have also made my way through most of Star Trek Discovery. Okay, I admit it. It's awesome. This is a really, really good show. And frankly, I don't feel like their pilot did the show justice because it gets better as it goes. Mm. So it probably just had to find its feet like most shows do, but I'm really enjoying it. I finally watched Black Mirror Bandersnatch. That's the interactive episode that they have at the end of season 4. Anyone that's looking for this, here's a hint for you. Most of the Netflix apps don't list it with season 4. It's its own thing. So search for it and you'll find it if you haven't found it otherwise. It's clever. I have to give them that. And I was wondering how they were going to handle the fact that, okay, I made all these decisions, but what if? And they handle that pretty well. So definitely worth checking that out. I am up to date on Mr. Robot.
Oh, Josh, this is where I feel like a terrible person.
Josh, we talked about this.
We did talk about this. How far behind am I?
3 episodes.
3 episodes? Seriously?
Seriously.
Really far behind. Holy crap. I'm sorry. I'm the worst.
Okay. Okay. Well, I have an assignment for Josh. on your time off, you need to watch some Mr. Robot episodes.
That'll definitely happen.
Okay. Also, I think I mentioned before that I had watched the season finale of Extras, but there was actually a final special that ended Extras, and I watched that. And that was good. I liked that even better than most of the series, which is kind of interesting. I watched all of The Politician on Netflix. Just absolutely watch it. If you have Netflix, just watch this show. It is great. They make it look like a teen drama. It is, but it's so good. Absolutely watch this show. I started to watch Treadstone. We're only one episode in. This is the limited series, I believe, on USA. I think it's USA, that's based in the world of Jason Bourne. And the first episode was good. So I'm going to stick with it and see how it does. It airs on Tuesday nights. I have tried to watch the first episode of Stumptown, probably the highest lauded show of the new season, twice now, and I've fallen asleep. So I probably won't be watching that. We watched Men in Black International, the movie. Liked it. It was fun. Really enjoyed it. Glad we didn't go to the theaters for it. But it was good. And then I'm caught up on podcasts, which I'm really happy about. Although today's Tuesday, so a bunch of stuff probably has hit since I got home. But
probably
that's that. Now, one other thing that I wanted to talk about. I posted a picture on Twitter this week of two of these little old iPod, I can't even say it, it's so old, iPod gems that I picked up at an estate sale for $5 each. And they were all beat up, and I came home, and after completely smothering them with Clorox disinfectant rags, I charged them and forgot that there was probably music on them. The 80 gig iPod has this guy's probably entire music collection on it.
Right.
This is a household in my neighborhood where the guy died and they're clearing out the house. And I have this guy's personal music collection that I've been listening to in my car for the last week. It is the most strange, personal, awkwardly intimate experience and insight into this person I never knew.
Yeah. That's really weird.
Really, really weird. But I'm enjoying his music. A lot of stuff I normally wouldn't listen to. 70s rock. There's a lot of hip hop on there. Yeah, well,
70s rock was really good.
I'm not a 70s rock kind of guy. Not me. Not my thing. I'm an 80s music guy.
Yeah, that's where you went wrong.
There's none of that on here.
Good. There should be almost not. There's almost nothing worth listening to from the 80s.
Curiously enough, all three of the Bourne soundtracks. I don't know what that's about. Huh. But really eclectic collection of stuff and just a weird, fascinating, just a weird experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really neat experience.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right. That is what has been entertaining me, Josh. How about you?
Okay. Mine is all
game,
content.
Game,
no,
game,
it's not all game. It's not all games.
Game. Oh, there's okay. Real hockey. Game.
It's not all games. On the Xbox side, played a little bit of Dirt Rally 2 because that came to Game Pass. It's cool. It's really cool. I like rally racing games. Playing through Gears 5 with Joe DiStasio. That game has so much more story in it than Gears 4, and the graphics are amazing. It's a good game. It's a really good game. Glad I'm playing it. NHL 20, a little bit of that, of course. And then the only other gaming thing is actually kind of surprising. I don't think I would have mentioned this on a previous episode. Call of Duty Mobile. My daughter asked me about this a couple of weeks ago when it got announced, and she's like, "Are you going to play that?" And I'm like, "No." Like, Call of Duty on a phone, that sounds terrible. It's not terrible. I actually really like it. It works really well. It gives me what I'm looking for out of Call of Duty. So I still play this almost daily. I like it a lot. It's fun. I wanted to do a quick update on one aspect of Play Pass. This is the game and app subscription service on Android. I wondered, like, I flipped on my Android TV the other day just to check some things, and I thought, I wonder if any of the Play Pass games are on here, and if it's smart enough to recognize my account and make them free. And they are, and it works. Like, I only looked for one game. I looked for Evoland. It was on there. It said, you know, it marked it as a game that I owned. I didn't have to pay for it. It doesn't, the store is not updated to have like a separate section for Play Pass. But if you are a Play Pass subscriber and you have an Android TV, especially an NVIDIA Shield where you probably have a controller for it already, it's worth checking out to see if some of the games that you might want to play, especially with a controller on a TV, are there, because it'll work if they're there. But not every Android game is also available on Android TV. I was actually looking for Stardew Valley. It was not there. But when I searched for Stardew Valley, Evoland came up. I have no idea how people are gaming these store listings, but whatever, it worked. Back to watching things, a lot of football, college football on Saturday, Detroit Lions football on Sunday, and last Monday night, the worst officiated game in history, perhaps. Of course, some Penguins hockey, as usual. Good place, mention that. I am up to date on that. Not up to date at all on Mr. Robot. I did watch a fair amount of Homeland. I finished season 5, started season 6.
Nice.
I suppose I could have been watching Mr. Robot when I was watching Homeland.
They're kind of equally stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, season 6, I do not like what they did with Peter Quinn. Not happy about that.
Nope.
I'm not going to get into what they did with him, but I really like that character, and this is a hard season to watch. And then I have a podcast that I want to point out. My wife actually told me about this one. My wife is not nearly into podcasts like I am. She subscribes to a few. I subscribe to like 50. So it's kind of weird when she recommends one to me. This one is called 1619, and it's from the New York Times. So, you know, with a big production house like that behind it, you expect really high production quality. It's not quite as high of production values as like Serial or things like that, but it's still really good. It's still really well done. So what the heck is a show called 1619 about? It's in reference to the year 1619. I'll just kind of read some of the description of the show. In August of 1619, a ship carrying more than 20 enslaved Africans arrived in the English colony of Virginia. America was not yet America, but this was the moment it began. No aspect of this of the country that would be formed here has been untouched by the 250 years of slavery that followed. On the 400th anniversary of that fateful moment, it is time to tell the story. And so it's told a lot like, you know, a Serial or something like that. There's a lot of interviews and stuff. And it talks a lot about the history of Africans and then African Americans, really, and the history of slavery on our continent and what it has meant for the people of this country. And it's really, really interesting. So it's a weekly show. Go and check it out. I think there's 7 or 8 episodes available now. It's a really insightful show, and it is quite well done. So
that sounds really good. It also sounds like it'd be a hard listen.
It is a hard listen. It at times is a very hard listen. Because eventually, like episodes 6, 7, some of the more recent ones, they're talking about stuff that is going on now that is still just absolute garbage that people have to deal with, the stuff that they're still dealing with. So yeah, it is a hard listen, but it's useful. You know, it's things that we should know. It's things that we should all know. So
yeah, that's good. That's very good. I had heard about that, and I'm glad to hear it's as good as you say it is. Stuff like that, like any mechanism that we have for sharing information like that is so important as states decide what histories they're going to tell, and as society becomes more oversensitive and concerned about the way they present things. It's just good to get the facts and the stories.
Right. Absolutely. So that was called 1619. All right, you've got a couple of announcements before we get out of here.
All right. Well, so the first is that everybody needs to go see Zombieland 2 in the theaters.
Why, Richard? Is it because it's amazing?
It's because it's going to be amazing. I mean, look at the trailer. It looks hysterical. Also, it may just happen to be in my lineup on the movie draft that I did with Team Mixtape, or as Team Mixtape, in the Diamond Club Stream Team Leagues. So, you know, I might have a vested interest in making sure the numbers are up there.
This sounds like a conflict of interest, Richard.
Not at all. I'm promoting the movie. I think this is a good thing.
Sure.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, the other thing is that, Josh, you're going to be taking a couple weeks off.
Yep.
And we're going to have a different schedule for the next couple of weeks. We kind of hinted at this previously. I am going to try to do a show or two during your break. One of them, I'm trying to get James Montemagno on. So,
oh, you're calling him out publicly.
I'm totally calling him out on it. Like that's it. The way to ensure that I can get him back on here. And I think that'll be a lot of fun. And I have an idea for another episode as well. So hopefully we will be able to keep people entertained, but we very, very likely will not be doing anything live for the next couple of weeks.
Right.
So let's not expect any chat room or any live mixer stuff, but we will remind people when new episodes are coming out.
Yep. Yep. Cool. I hope that you can line all that stuff up because I'm sure it'll be awesome.
Absolutely. I think it'll be fun.
Cool. All right. So if you want to get a hold of us, we're pretty much everywhere. We're on Twitter at Richard Gunther, at Josh Pollard, at Digimedia Zone. We're also on Instagram. Well, when I say we, I really mean the website and Richard. I'm not cool enough for Instagram, I think.
Your wife is cool enough, but you're not.
That is absolutely true. Yes. We're also on Facebook. Richard, you've also got another podcast to share with everybody. It's called Home On, where you cover DIY smart home tech. What's going on with Home On?
Well, you know, it was just the Smart Kitchen Summit recently. So I invited Steve Savagin, the CEO and founder of Anova Culinary. That's the company that makes the sous vide cooker that I have. And they have a cool new oven coming out. And we talk a little bit about the Smart Kitchen Summit. And we talk a little bit about the news of the day. And I let a little hint drop about some work that I'm doing now. So all of that coming up in the next episode of Home On.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll be back for live shows in a few weeks. So no reason to really plug that here. But that's going to do it for episode 501. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. He'll be back with some other people in the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.